We are pleased to inform you that you have a place at Potterversity.
A Potter Studies podcast. On this episode, teaching the Hogwarts way. For joining us at Potterversity. Today, Emily Strand and I will talk with Imbalia Thomas and Brent Satterley about Harry Potter and the magical art of teaching. I am Katie McDaniel, professor of history at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, and co-editor of Harry Potter for Nerds 2.
And I am Emily Strand, instructor of comparative religions and cultural competency at Mount Carmel College and author of several Harry Potter essays.
This is another episode in our series devoted to conversations about chapters in our Potterversity companion book of essays. Today, we're going to talk about Hogwarts professors Albus Dumbledore and Dolores Umbridge, both controversial in their way, and what they might teach us about the art of teaching itself. Now, Emily, when you were reading Harry Potter, has it influenced your approach to teaching and learning at all?
That's an interesting question. I would say that it has definitely given me a kind of a handle to relate to, especially a certain subset of the students by, you know, when you can kind of test the waters by like throwing out a Harry Potter reference and you kind of see what the reaction is. And then sometimes if it's like a really positive reaction or it kind of lightens the room a little bit, then, you know, you try a little bit more. You try something from a different, you know, intellectual property like Star Wars or Black Panther or something, you know, you just kind of throw out these references. And so I think I got started doing that with Harry Potter. It's tricky because the key is, you know, you don't want to leave anybody out. So you want to kind of do a diverse array, but and some people just aren't into anything. But so I think that is the biggest.
Common ground.
Yeah, exactly. Way of establishing common ground. What about you?
Yeah. So now I have used it in that way. And also, you know, when I'm teaching Nietzsche, I like to say there is no good and evil. There is only power and those too weak to seek it. Right. So which is basically that's just Nietzsche coming out of, you know, Voldemort out of the back of Quirrell's head. Right. So and I've done some other things that are like that, that, you know, make a kind of connection, the rise of totalitarianism and, the you know, the five or the Phoenix. And I've made those kinds of connections as a way to get people who would be interested in Harry Potter to be interested in, you know, some things that are historical as well. Right. And to see that Harry Potter is, it is very historical, but I also think about the teaching and the teachers in Harry Potter. I actually wrote a pedagogical essay called Harry Potter and the Ghost Teacher, because of course, history teachers don't come across very well.
No.
At Hogwarts.
No, they're dead.
The worst teacher in the school.
Well, I don't know about that. And that's the thing. Mm. I mean, we can,
oh, I guess that's
debatable.
Right.
It's debatable.
We are talking about Dolores Umbridge today.
You know, and then there's Snape. I mean, personally, I would rather be bored than abused myself. So, I mean, there's that.
Okay. All right.
It could be worse is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it does make you think about, like, how are students appreciating the teaching? You know, what are the best teaching methods for the best subjects? And I think that's actually it's a very vivid field where we have a lot of people thinking about teaching and learning because they are looking at it from a Hogwarts point of view. So I'm very interested to talk more with our guests today, both of whom have written a lot about this topic in particular. And so we are joined today first by Dr. Imbalia Thomas, Associate Professor of Teaching of English to Speakers of Other Languages, TESOL, in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Kansas. As a TESOL teacher educator, she uses the Harry Potter novels to illuminate theoretical concepts about teacher knowledge, teaching practices, and desired dispositional stances toward learners of English as an additional language. Imbalia's chapter in our book is called Dumbledorisms, the Idiosyncratic Style of a Hogwarts Headmaster. Welcome, Imbalia.
Hi, I'm glad to be here today.
Yes, and we've actually had you on. We had you on the earlier incarnation of the show, Reading, Writing, Rolling, to talk about some of these, you know, some of how you used it, have used Harry Potter to talk about, you know, students who are like border crossing.
Absolutely.
So great stuff there. Okay. Also on the show today is Dr. Brent Satterley, a licensed clinical social worker and professor of social work at Widener University's Center for Social Work Education. His areas of expertise include human sexuality and social work pedagogies, clinical work with LGBTQIA+ populations, LGBTQIA+ professional identity management, faculty student mentorship, HIV/AIDS, family therapy, and the use of Harry Potter and other fandoms in teaching social justice. He's been honored with the Lindbach Award for Distinguished Teaching. His chapter in the Potterversity book is called Hem Hem, I Take Umbrage with Bigotry, Using the Witch in Pink to Counter Oppression. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it. No, I'm thrilled to be here.
So glad you had to have you both on. You two are some of my favorite conference presenters. I try to never miss when I know you're going to be on a panel because you both have a different style, but both of you are really compelling speakers. So I'm delighted to hear more about your own thinking about that in the Harry Potter universe as well. So let's start with just the basic question of why the Harry Potter series lends itself to contemplations of teaching and learning. And whether you saw those connections right away or if they came to you somewhat later.
I did not originally see the relationship between teaching and the Harry Potter novels. I started reading the novels when I was working in a summer camp with middle school and high school students. I had a student who was a huge Harry Potter fan. And so I started reading the books while I was a teacher with this student. And so when I read the books, I read them for the characters, for the adventures, what was happening, you know, primarily with the teachers. I cared about what was happening with the teachers.
Right. You were already identifying with them.
Yeah. I was already identifying with the teachers. And I really could only identify with the teachers. I would see Harry and Hermione and Ron as students. And so I really entered the stories through the realm of the teachers. It was only once I started working in the School of Education at KU and working with teacher education programs where we're training undergraduates and current teachers to become teachers that I realized there was so much rich history and story and ways of thinking about teaching that were embedded within the series. And not just thinking about teaching, but the relationship between teachers and students. And so it was just kind of, you know, working with these future teachers that I realized there's so much rich information within the series. And since so many of my students had read the books or seen the movies, it was just a really good vehicle for dealing with some of the things we had to talk about in our schools.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think my guess is, Brent, that you have something similar, that you saw the Harry Potter novels gave you kind of an entree into talking about often very like difficult, challenging issues that some of your social work students were going to face.
Oh, for sure. And I will tell you, you know, to answer your question immediately, I was like, well, yeah, it's in a school. I mean, all the characters are like teachers and students and staff. And as someone who was, you know, started reading the books and watching the movies and things of that nature, while I was pursuing tenure, I very much similar to Imbalia, you know, engaged the story through the teachers, but also kind of paradoxically, I think because of my own lived experience and the work of my field, in countering social injustice wherever it lingers. It was also connecting with the bullied in the experience, both Harry, you know, and some of the traumas that he experiences, but also Neville. And what it meant to be a target in a school setting. So and it wasn't really until Order of the Phoenix where Dolores Umbridge exploded onto the scene that it all just blossomed inside me around what this story was telling me.
You know, some of what Emily and I were talking about in terms of Harry Potter as common ground, I can see that both of you are using that. And you are really training up people who are, as the adult in the room, right, going to be dealing with kids who are struggling and kids who are bullied and, you know, kids who don't speak the language of the culture that they're coming into. And so, you know, Harry Potter, Hogwarts really speaks to all of those kinds of experiences.
That's right. And it's a series that people have been reading all around the world. And so even in classrooms mm-hmm. that are international, you know, classrooms or spaces where students are coming in from all over the world, it's a text where a lot of students are familiar with it. And even if they haven't read the novels, they've seen the pictures or they've heard their, you know, friends talk about the movies. And even if they hate it, at least they have some frame of reference for who some of the characters are. And that's really rich when you're a teacher to be able to draw upon those shared experiences.
Sometimes when we think about the teaching in Harry Potter, it can be, you know, sort of exaggerated. I mean, like Katie and I were discussing with Professor Binns or even Professor Snape, Professor Umbridge. But you two have really shown how deeply the series has made you think about your own pedagogy. So how has the series made you think more deeply about that? And how have you incorporated lessons learned from the Hogwarts teachers?
I'm a social work professor. And I think one of the things that Harry Potter helped me really to do is, for lack of a better phrase, embrace my magic as a teacher and a social worker, but also as an out gay sissy boy drag queen, right? All of these things that aren't always conventional in what might be considered modern day academe, and often which can be targeted, you know, by the powers that be, including, you know, but not limited to, you know, faculty governance processes and your committees, all those kinds of things. But I think one of the things that I learned the most about incorporating lessons learned from Hogwarts teachers was what not to do. And like, you know, I mean, Dumbledore like selectively favored students based on identity or houses. Snape, like, you know, literally his personality infected his pedagogy, like how he taught, harmed students in a classroom. Slughorn treated students as objects. And of course, Umbridge, everything she did was punish, exploit, manipulate, lie, torture, all that kind of stuff for her own ends. But I will say it's, you know, it's not all bad for Hogwarts professors. I mean, one of the things I really liked was Hagrid taught me the most important lesson, which was connect with your students and be humble. My biggest pet peeve for teachers and faculty, I don't care if you're like kindergarten or you are professor emeritus, is faculty arrogance, right? That I am better than you as a student. And that's not my style. It's not my thing. Philosophically, theoretically, all of that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that, you know, we're in this together and I want you to succeed. And the best way for me to do that with you is to build relationship with you and get to know who you are so that you are seen and heard and known. And I think those kinds of things are important. Like McGonagall celebrated the whole student. She saw Harry perform really well and knew that he would do well in Quidditch. And that happened outside her classroom, not in the classroom. You know, and so those are lots of different ways. And ultimately, you know, let's just all be like Lupin and actually teach our subject. Right?
But, you know, I can't even tell you how many presentations I've seen about teachers at Hogwarts that absolutely think Hagrid is the worst of the teachers. And I'm so glad to hear you talk about his virtues as a teacher, because I do think he's good. That's a real value. And I hadn't encapsulated it in my thinking as humility, But, you know, what a, I think that's a great way to think about him.
And his willingness to connect with the students. Because right. You're right, Brent, like you said, I mean, there is this problem of elitism among certain professors. And I mean, it's really very off-putting. And I just wonder how, you know, if they wouldn't, you know, people who complain so much about the students or put students down for asking what they think are stupid questions, or if they aren't just communicating that they're not fulfilled in their role, and if they wouldn't be more fulfilled if they would actually let themselves make a connection with the students instead of constantly putting up the wall between themselves and the students.
I think it's a wonderful framework when you think a little bit about, you know, the idea of like students are the most important part of your classroom. Like, that's why we're here. That's
they're the reason for the season.
Right, exactly.
And, so and the paycheck.
I'm constantly surprised when faculty seem to experience students as an annoyance or in the way. And I will say, Hagrid, I mean, he embraced experiential learning like nobody's business. And I'm a right. social worker. So field education is our signature pedagogy. Let's get out in the field and do the work.
And Bali, what about you? What have you learned and incorporated?
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure how to jump into this conversation because so much of what you all have said resonates with me. But I think I'll go back a little bit and just reference this idea that Brent raised earlier about kind of thinking about Harry Potter while he was undergoing tenure and while he was on the tenure track. And that was the same experience for me. Tenure really can make you reflective if you are that kind of person who is typically reflective. There's a lot about becoming a professor that people don't understand, that's really difficult. You see some of the best and some of the worst traits of humanity that come from within your own department, across campus. Like, you just see so much of humanity that is unexpected in these teaching situations. And so as I am going through the process of tenure, and part of my job is to help train up future teachers, going back to Hogwarts really made me think about the teachers in the stories in a very different way. It made me have so much compassion for the humanity that is within each of these teachers, even the worst ones, the ones who treat students awfully, like Snape, even Umbridge. It made me think about, I always had a great deal of sympathy for Lupin, but, you know, as a African-American professor, you know, working in a predominantly white institution, there's just so much about my own lived experience that I saw within Lupin's life. Just mm-hmm. across all of the teachers, I could see my colleagues, people that I knew on campus who in different ways were suffering, hurting, trying to understand what it meant to work in an educational space in higher education and to do a decent job with all of the pressures that we have. So thinking about my colleagues and teaching in this way just really helped me to have more compassion for the humanity of the Hogwarts teachers, and in particular for Snape and for Dumbledore.
And, you know, I think you can really see that in your work and in the chapter you wrote for us. You are humanizing teachers in the way, like, let's appreciate the difficulty of the situation yes. that somebody in the classroom might be experiencing.
Absolutely. You know, as teachers, we are not allowed to have doubts. Mm-hmm. We are not allowed to be insecure. We are not allowed to like or dislike. I mean, we can't express the fact that there are sometimes just students who you don't resonate with, that mm-hmm. there is sometimes animosity on the part of the student towards you, and sometimes vice versa. And so how you as an individual deal with the reality and the humanity of teaching can be so complicated. And I think with a character like Snape, when you see how difficult the time he has in overcoming his own childhood issues to be kind to a student who has no family, like, you realize, wow, you know, human beings are really hurt when they walk into the classroom sometimes. And how can we have compassion for that individual? How can we set up a space where they can heal and be better teachers, better human beings to their colleagues and to the students around them?
Oh, yeah. The experience of authenticity is like so precious to me, and not like Gollum precious, but, you know, precious. And I am a quintessential geek, obviously. But I think one of the things that is so powerful is that we don't create time and space for teachers to embrace that humanity, to not know how to handle it when I have a student in my class who openly says, well, I think all gay people are going to go to hell, you know, and here I am, you know, as an out gay faculty member. How do I manage that? How do I navigate that? And what I see is my mission as both a professor and a social worker, because I'm thinking about all of the future clients they're going to have, their queer clients and the client and the people that who love queer people that might work with this particular future social worker. What's incumbent upon me ethically? And, you know, and it's one of the ways that I think in that context, usually I always remember Umbridge in those moments, because Umbridge would punish. Mm-hmm. And she, anybody who spoke like that, would, Umbridge would just slam them, punish them. And that's, you know, my grandma always taught me, you get more bees to honey than vinegar. And even in the face of that kind of pain in the moment in a classroom, when a student says something like that, I go back to Hagrid. I need to connect with that student and help them understand the humanness of what it means to be a social worker in this context and to pursue social justice. And it creates a sense of cognitive and affective dissonance, if you will, you know, because as it's the whole notion of what, you know, Alport's contact theory, the more you build relationships with people who are different from you, it's a heck of a lot harder to hate them. Because you can't simplify them into this nice neat category. Human beings are complex but also messy.
That's right. And you know, even though we, you know, as educators really reach out to those students who may say things where they may reject us, one of the things that I am trying to emphasize for my students is that it is important to be authentic and true to yourself. You don't have to say in this moment that you are upset with the student, but you have to understand for yourself when you are upset with the student, or when your students aren't showing you love and that makes you feel sad, or that, you know, that makes you feel like an ineffective teacher. Like, I think it is so important that if you want to survive in this field, you have to be true to yourself. You have to understand how you as an educator are motivated, what is driving you, so that you can then rectify whatever challenges you face that are in front of you. And that's one of the things I love about Dumbledore. You know, I think over the course of these 7 novels that you see someone who is wise and who is supposed to be all-knowing, really doubting himself in ways that aren't always obvious, but that over the course of the series, you see him coming to understand what he knows and what he doesn't know. And then finally, his ability to kind of share that with a student and to admit to a student what you don't know is so challenging, but it is really and truly the only way to connect and have an authentic relationship. And I think that's, for me, one of the biggest takeaways from the Harry Potter series.
And he does admit to his mistakes. It takes him a while, but he apologizes.
Yes, it does. And that is how it is in a lot of classrooms. Often teachers will not apologize or will not admit when they don't know information. And I understand that. You want your students to feel secure in the classroom. You want to know that you are guiding them along the right paths. But the truth is, especially if you're working with graduate students, that you don't always know, you don't always have the answers to things, and you definitely don't always have them on the spot. And in order to be a truly authentic educator, you have to be able to say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure, but I'm going to need some time to figure that out you know, and then come back around to that issue.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about this because, you know, again, it's that idea of humility. And I think as a student, I didn't necessarily always think I had to have the right answers. Although I will say, I like to have the right answers as a student. It is my nature, my Hermione-like nature. Then something happens as you, cross to the other side of the desk where you feel like you're not allowed to have that anymore. And you're not, or you're at least not allowed to admit to it anymore. And I do think that's a kind of toxic element of the process of, you know, as I say, moving to the other side of the desk. That's a lot about like how we're seeing the teachers at Hogwarts. And Mbali, you were saying that particularly that's who you were identifying with as you read the novels. But what does the series tell us about being a student? And, you know, did watching Harry, Hermione, Ron et al. Sort of deal with the difficulties at Hogwarts, did that change the way that you thought about your students or how you approached them? Mbalia?
Oh, wow. You know, I wish we had this discussion at the end of the summer after I've recovered from a long year. But I have to say, you know, and I will couch this in terms of having lived through 2 years of the COVID pandemic, of really trying to shepherd students through very difficult times. You know, honestly, what I'm learning about students is what I should have known from the beginning, which is they are very invested in their own lives and experiences. And they are often not thinking about me as a teacher and what I go through. And that can be very difficult as an educator, you know, that you have to keep showing up and pretending that life is all good, you know, everything is perfect so that you can be there for your students. And I think in setting up this space where everything is about our students, especially in a teacher education setting, I think it's not realistic. I don't know if it serves them well. It does allow them to be successful as students, but if you're going to be a teacher, I think you have to understand that teaching can be about, you know, self-sacrifice on some level, or at least self-service or other service. It's other service. Mm-hmm. And so I think what I'm learning, what I have learned about students through the Harry Potter novels is that the novels are written from the perspective of a student. It's about how students see their teachers and see the world and their ways of coming to understand. But as an educator looking in on the lives of these students, I know that there's a lot larger, greater perspective of what reality is really about. And sometimes I wish I could stop my students and say, hey, you know, there's more going on here than just what you see and what you are experiencing, and that you can have a much richer and deeper engagement with community and humanity if you just take a minute to see beyond your immediate wants and needs. So, you know, that's, again, 2 years into a pandemic, having to, you know, spend a lot of time helping students who are having very difficult times navigating school. But, you know, the Harry Potter series really just reinforces that the books are really written from the perspective of the students. And they so often miss some of these deeper issues that are motivating their teachers and sometimes to their detriment.
So wise, Mbalia. I need to have like a cross stitch with some of that written on it.
Well, I put a lot of thought into it. Tenure makes you very thoughtful. It makes you very reflective.
Yes, it does. And honestly, I think one of the things that Mbali, you got me thinking about the tenure process. So I'm like, oh my. But honestly, the piece that jumped out at me as we were talking here is the way that I approach it as a teacher to students is one word, and that's grace.
Yes.
You know, especially bringing up the COVID pandemic, I have never I've been teaching since 1997, and I've never in my tenure seen students suffer as they have in the last 2 years. I just have not. Mm-hmm. Primarily, they were relegated to homes that were often unsafe, especially for LGBTQIA kids. Mm-hmm. When I say kids, I don't mean like youth, although there were youth who had that experience. I'm talking about graduate students, college students, doctoral students, all that kind of stuff. Issues of intimate partner violence, trauma, all those kinds of things. And I'll tell you that I am so glad that I am trained as a social worker, because I use my clinical skills like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. And I give a huge thank you to Madame Pomfrey in this for the learning about always create a space for healing for your students, right? And, you know, and the idea of that, because growing up, I was Neville, right? And my world was like, there was a Draco in every locker room and an Umbridge in every classroom. And it was a violent experience in school. One of the things that I think was really powerful is recognizing, who do I want to be as a teacher to students who are experiencing that kind of trauma or abuse in their world? Well, I certainly don't want to be Umbridge. But I think one of the things that it was really powerful in that is recognizing that the way that the systems that we were working in, our colleges, our universities, keep teaching. Where I really got a lot of joy in that was not kind of dealing with whatever the pressures were in academia to make this, to keep our organizations solvent, which is not the most important thing, but rather to how to go about maintaining the mission of our universities, which is to help our students learn and grow. And I think one of the parts of this that was significant was how teachers help each other. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we were there on social media groups, faculty getting together and helping each other at the engineering department worked with business faculty. The social work faculty worked with nursing faculty. Nursing faculty helped psychology faculty. That was really magical. And I think one of the pieces that is really significant about all of that is, just like in Harry Potter, our students are knowing what it's like to live in war. Both as it relates to something like a pandemic experience, but also war in the world, and what that brings up. And I honestly think that those kinds of pieces cannot be understated in their importance to examine as a teacher, because when you don't feel safe or okay, you can't learn. There's no way you can learn. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're a doctoral student, there's just no way. And so attending to those kinds of realities is important.
Yeah, I love what Brent is saying. And I would add to that piece, and this is a thing that I advocate for on campus, because not all campuses are the same, that, just as our students can't learn in spaces where they don't feel safe, our teachers can't teach in spaces where they don't feel safe. And there's so many campuses where faculty and staff are not feeling safe. They are not finding spaces where they can renew themselves after long and difficult semesters. And I think that while we're doing a better job of helping our students who are at risk and at need, we're doing a terrible job of doing that for our faculty and staff.
So true.
That's really powerful. And, I also really appreciate Brent. Sometimes I forget at the grace that people did show during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And to our colleagues as well as to students. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good reminder, right? That when I feel down about the world, I do need to be reminded, hey, most of us are actually trying to help each other out.
There I quote Mr. Rogers, look to the helpers, right?
Right.
That has always been inspirational in this. And I think when you have organizations and systems that are as corrupt as Umbridge and the ministry, then we need teachers who can stand up to that and take care of our students.
Speaking of these teachers, each of your chapters focuses on a particular teacher who has a very distinctive style. For Imbalia, it's Dumbledore, and for Brent, it's Dolores Umbridge. So what is style in teaching? How important is it? And how do these Hogwarts professors or others demonstrate that?
Well, style for me is the repeated behaviors and acts, and those can include linguistic acts that an individual adopts in their interactions with others. Style is often reflective of some type of stance that we hold, the ways we think about, feel about, or know about things, and how that's expressed in our actions and our language. So people often think about style in terms of dress. But as an applied linguist, I look at style in terms of language and how we use our language. And for me, the style that sticks out the most, because it is repeated across the series, is Dumbledore's use of aphorisms, which I've termed Dumbledorisms. Actually, I've stolen the term from a friend who I give plenty of credit to in my chapter. But it's a term that we've talked about a little bit, and we do call it Dumbledorisms.
Yeah, I like how, you know, you've got a very focused definition of style because it's linguistic understanding, yes, style and stance. And you talk about that in relation to Dumbledore. And I think about that also in terms of this question of authenticity in the classroom, you know, that Dumbledore is, these aphorisms, these Dumbledorisms are a way that he is conveying, you know, something of his true self through these educational interactions that are not strictly classroom-based, but are still right. Educational.
Yes. And, you know, and the thing about the Dumbledorisms is that the way in which they come across is that they don't always feel very authentic, because instead of just coming out and saying, you know, I have a piece of advice for you, or I'm not really sure if I should tell right. you this thing, Dumbledore gives some type of, you know, trite remark or statement that doesn't really sound like he's connecting with his students, right? It just sounds like he's kind of saying something fancy that a wise person would say, like the truth, it is a beautiful and terrible thing and should therefore be treated with great caution. Like, it's like you get this very wise statement, but as a young person, it may not really resonate with you or have mm-hmm. any immediate purchase. And so the Dumbledorisms are interesting because it is this way in which Dumbledore continues to come across as wise, but not necessarily connecting with students, even though I think that part of this use is that he's trying to manage his relationships with students. He knows things that they don't know, that they haven't experienced yet, and what other way to kind of bridge that knowledge than with such a statement.
And you know, Brent, I've sort of find your study is also of somebody who's controversial, except there's not a lot of people who want to support Dolores Umbridge's teaching style. And I'm really right. fascinated by your approach to Umbridge's style and the way the reversals that you do as you embody her in the classroom.
Well, you know, you're asking about style. You're asking a gay male, like a cisgender male, sissy boy, drag queen about style. Really? Of course, I mean, style is everything. It's everything. And by that, I mean, it's like a lot of it has to do with the embodiment of how you frame your relationships with students, with colleagues, with staff, you know, with the folks who come around and pick up my garbage in my office. I mean, to me, that just, your style, like, is part of the expression of your authentic self. And so you're, you know, if you're like an oily, embittered teacher with a face like a cat's ass who always makes me feel like I need a shower. Hello, Snape. You know, I mean, that's a style that I do not want to emulate. But what I really think is that style can like invite or repel, it can engage or dismiss, it can affirm or shame. And I think with Dolores, you know, she, for me, I think because, I, you know, if I may quote from from my chapter, because this was really, when I was writing this chapter, this was an epiphany for me personally. A social work professor who's a drag queen is nothing if not a storyteller to bring tales of social injustice to life in ways that can indeed be heart-wrenching. Dolores is the antithesis of who I am as a social worker. Given the unconventional embodiment of drag, I was immediately activated by this pink wicked witch who is every brutal bully, every dispassionate teacher, every violent adult I ever encountered. I must not tell lies. There were too many. And by embodying her, I controlled them. For me, I mean, even as I'm love reading it. This, like, I just, it like, it was such a powerful thing for me. I have goosebumps, mm-hmm. you know, that for, it was such a powerful moment. And I think the reality is that style communicates self. If you want to go, you know, with Jungian archetypes, if you want to go with the brilliance that Imbalia talked about in the use of language and expression of Dumbledorisms, you know, or you want to talk about, you know, putting on a wig and like beating your face. And for those, that's a drag colloquialism for like doing your makeup. So
thank you. Appreciate the translation.
But the idea there is that it has to do with building those connections. And I go back to the importance of what it means to build relationships with students. And every teacher that I know of has a different style. I mean, in Harry Potter, I think that the professors there are really hyperbolic in their style. You know, if you, you know, think about, you know, that experience, a flaky hippie in the attic moaning about some kind of tea that I obviously didn't get, you know, or like an animal loving giant of a man who I probably would accidentally call Professor Daddy at some point if I was a student. I mean, come on, that's a style. And I think it's a really magical thing. And it allows teachers to use their sense of self in the classroom in a way that is disparate from your colleagues. And that's a good thing. Students should have a wide breadth of exposure to different types of teaching styles.
And I just want to add that, you know, that style, that self is so personal. And I think that's what I love about the Harry Potter novels, is that if you really sit and you think about each of the teachers and how they are portrayed, how they are written, that there's so much about their lives and their backstories that we either are given information about or that we can imagine just on the, you know, based upon the kinds of teachers and human beings that we all know. Style is so deeply personal, so deeply personal.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting that both Dumbledore and Umbridge are people who are in really dominant, powerful positions, and they're politically powerful as well as powerful within the system of the school. And the way that they're navigating that is quite different, right? For all of Dumbledore's faults. And I find it so interesting, Brent, the way that you latched onto Umbridge as like the antithesis of who you are as your authentic self. And yet through the expression of Umbridge in drag, and your drag character is Clitoris Umbridge, which is
yes she is
fabulous. you know, that this becomes a way to fight oppression and to actually speak against the, you know, like hierarchical authoritarian qualities of the character. Just fascinating to me. I said something to a friend of mine about, I was like, why would you pick Umbridge? And my friend was like, well, Umbridge is kind of like awesome with the cats on the plates, right? And the, like, right, talk about a lot of style, you know, that you can hook into.
Well, she's your ironic icon.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so good to have fans, you know, but I think that the piece that is really critical there in that moment, though, is that, if you will, you know, Clitoris in Umbridge in that context isn't just striving for justice, like as to be, you know, is the antithesis of Dolores, but also, to be quite blunt, like as a white, able-bodied, cisgender man, like also looking at myself as Umbridge and where Umbridge is in me and owning my own privilege and how that has disenfranchised other groups of people historically, presently, and what that means to translate in my own classroom. Like owning my social positionality is a must in my classroom as in that context. So it's a double-edged sword there with striving towards justice, but also looking really again at that authentic self. And sometimes that's not always fun to or comfortable. And that's, which if I'm comfortable, then there's a problem.
Brent, you just made me realize the ways in which I am so Dumbledore-esque and how I use, you know, my wit and my smarts in class to have snappy comments. And it's a way of kind of trying to bridge the gap between me and these students that I'm teaching, who I feel very different from. And the ways in which these comments really do allow me to hide behind some of my own insecurities in terms of my fittingness within this space. And so, it's interesting that we've picked up on characters who perhaps we don't readily see a resonance with, but there's something there that those characters can teach us about ourselves. They can tell us about our own struggles and the things that have made school and schooling difficult for us and that we somehow want to kind of move against or learn from.
Some would say that even in that embalia, is what we might call repetition compulsion. Like, I'm going to continue to do this until I get it right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it's powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can see through our whole conversation here so far, the value of, you know, this fantasy universe and being able to use it to reflect on our own real world teaching. Although we'd all like to be teaching at Hogwarts, although maybe not. I don't know. It's pretty dangerous there.
And it's drafty.
I think the moving staircases, I would be lost. I would never make it to a single class.
Yeah,
I would have been eaten by Fluffy by now.
Right. So, but I mean, I think we can see the values of looking at, you know, the fictional fantasy universe of Hogwarts and how the professors there are navigating their experiences as well as the students. But what are some of the limitations of this fantasy world for how we kind of understand education and the teaching and learning process?
Some of the limitations. Well, you know, we don't get the full stories of the interactions. We don't always know what happens at the end between the students and the teachers or these various scenarios. I'm not sure what I think the limitations are for the stories. I think for me, they just provide affordances or opportunities to just think more deeply about context and situations that we think we have answers to. So perhaps there are no inherent limitations that I can pinpoint. I just see this as every time I engage with one of the books in this 7-part series, that I always come away with some new insight or some way of thinking about what happens in a school with students, with teachers, and all of the individuals who come into play with that space.
Yeah, this is like Tolkien's idea of recovery, I think it is, with fairy tales.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That you're able to actually see what's going on in your own life more clearly through this engagement with fairy than if it were, you know, like something else, nonfiction or
a realistic
Dickens
fiction.
Something like that.
That's right. Yeah. There's a writer called Parker Palmer.
I
love Parker Palmer. Yeah. And I'm not going to do his quote justice or he has a phrase for the kind of learning. It's like sideways learning or is learning on the slant. I think that's what it's called, learning on the slant, and the ways in which we can only really address these deep issues of the soul by coming at them sideways through story. And I feel like every time I read or I pick up and reread the Harry Potter series, that's exactly what's happening to me. I learn things about my own life through some of the events and things that I imagine about the characters that I would not learn in any other way if someone tried to tell me directly. Like if someone said, oh, you're just like Dumbledore, or, you know, you're more like Hagrid. Like I would argue against that. But in the process of reading and just kind of allowing myself to escape into this fantasy universe, something touches my soul and it speaks to me, not because I approach the books with that intention, but because somehow the texts are having this Bakhtinian dialogue with whatever are the deepest needs of my soul in that moment.
That was really powerful. And that's totally like, I think that encapsulates what I think we're doing in this whole podcast. You know, the way that story can speak to your soul and it can help you engage in the world and also with yourself in a better, richer way. I think that's what we're here for.
I completely agree, Ambalia. And I love what you just said. And it strikes me that in that context, fantasy for me was survival. Like, you know, when you're in a closet, hello, Harry Potter, when you live in a closet, like your whole world is fantasy in order to be able to survive. And that was a lot of my world and what it means to, you know, to be out as a gay man, but also in the context of what it means as an out gay man to use my magic intentionally with thought, in quote unquote the real world, creating a socially just classroom, that looks to attend to inequities, that mentors newer faculty. Please note that I did not say junior, and also the idea of
that.
Thanks. But the idea of what it means to recognize, ultimately the value of it is the sky's the limit. Like, I mean, Grossman talks about fans not being silent couch bound consumers, but you know how like the culture of fandom talks to us and we talk back to it. And, and I think that's a big part of this whole experience in a classroom. When you're up at 2 o'clock in the morning grading, or you're writing a grant, or you're reviewing, somebody else's P&T documents, or all kinds of stuff, that's a big part of it. And while doing assessment grids might not feel like really important parts of fantasy, well, that's because it's not. That's reality. And it, to quote my generation, reality bites.
Bureaucracy. Oh, that's right? Crazy.
Like everything doesn't turn out happily ever after. You know, trauma is real, bigotry is real, and all those kinds of things. But the notion of being able to live in fantasy is about connection. And that's because when I talk about, connection, either be it through the Harry Potter series or some kind of pop culture reference, different students literally pop up in my classroom. You can literally see engagement in certain things. And but my style also is I'm an edutainer, right? Will engage in jokes. I'm a faculty member who, does, kicks in the middle of the classroom and all kinds of stuff like that.
I thought I was the only one.
Right? And students are, and because I want to bring them into the fantasy of my classroom. Like, and a big part of the training in social work education anyway, or justice education, is about, okay, let's talk about the world we want to create and the world we want to live in, while also having a real lived experience of knowing what is out there and how to counter it.
Oh yeah. I love how you're bringing out the practicality there of fantasy for imagining a better future. Right.
And it's soothing. If I ask students, what'd you do like while you were quarantined? They were like, watch TV, read books,
Right.
Dove into the world of fantasy. That's what
And, we did not really talk about this here on this episode, but something that you mentioned about how, the fans are talking back, we're not just sort of absorbing everything. That's also a really important part of what you do with Clitoris Umbridge, Brent, also in your essay, you are talking back to J.K. Rowling about her statements about trans people and the way that she's gone about that. And so I just do want to, point our listeners to that this is an issue that you are able to engage with from that perspective.
And I will say that when all of that garbage first came out, I almost snapped my wand in half. Mm-hmm. I was so broken. Mm-hmm. I was so hurt and betrayed. And that's nothing compared to what I'm sure our fellow Potterheads who are trans or non-binary or gender non-conforming felt. And, the idea of what it means to be a socially just wizard is to also, like, I'm doing something right now in the Potterverse, so I'm going to be donating money to Teaching Transgender Institute. After that's just a personal commitment that I do in order to be able to keep doing this kind of work and remain in this magical world. It's essential for me because this is about, life or death for our trans communities. So important.
Yeah. And I think, I think this world, it could be a safe place for that because you've got Tonks, she herself in the Fantastic Beasts book tells you the problem of binaries between beings and beasts when she talks about that argument that they had back in, wizarding history. So it should be a safe spot. And it breaks my heart what she has said has in fact made it not safe for everyone.
And I will say that one of the things that I love about the Tonks, go read the book, or read the chapter, because Clitoris talks right back to JK, and
yes,
and it's a very important part of my work, both personally and professionally, I would not feel okay, even raising a wand without it.
Yeah, and I have read a lot of satisfying takes on, speaking back to J.K. Rowling on this issue, but none so satisfying as Clitoris Umbridge's. So
totally agree. I'm so, so glad to have your essay in our volume, Brent. I think it's wonderful.
I'm honored.
Well, thank you so much, Imbalia and Brent, for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. It's been great being here.
It's absolutely been gloriously magical.
This has been delightful. And, for all Imbalia that you were talking about, I need a little time before I can talk about this. I have found this conversation to be so heartening as a teacher. And I hope that teachers will find this episode because, I think we are a community that needs to have compassion for ourselves. Yes. And each other as teachers. And I think this whole episode really speaks to that. Listeners, what we have discussed today is just the tip of the iceberg. So be sure to read Imbalia's and Brent's full chapters in our Potterversity book, and then let us know what you think. Today, I'm going to close our lesson with the Hogwarts School song. I will not be singing it. You're welcome. Hogwarts, Hogwarts, Hoggy Warty Hogwarts, teach us something, please. Whether we be old and bald or young with scabby knees, our heads could do with filling with some interesting stuff. For now, they're bare and full of air, dead flies and bits of fluff. So teach us things worth knowing. Bring back what we've forgot. Just do your best. We'll do the rest and learn until our brains all rot.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Potterversity. Send us your thoughts on the episode or propose ideas for future episodes by writing to pottervercitypodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, consider leaving a review on iTunes. And be sure to follow Potterversity on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Potterversity is brought to you by MuggleNet, the number one Wizarding World resource since 1999. Emma Nicholson is technical director, and the show is produced by Laurie Beckoff. Our theme music is performed by The Town, featuring Sean Elsbird, Scott Hacker, Travis Princey, Ashley Shepherd, and Emily Strand, and produced by Sean Elsbird. I'm your announcer, Dr. Sarah Brown.
Until next time, class dismissed.